This is Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. Today we're talking about the possible efficacy of fewer than the three standard doses of vaccines against human papillomavirus, HPV, with a senior author of a Lancet oncology study. Dr. Cosette Wheeler is with the University of New Mexico's Health Sciences Center. Welcome, Dr. Wheeler.
Thank you.
Earlier studies found hints that fewer than three usual doses might protect against oncogenic or high-risk viruses. And you were associated with one of these, one of the two trials whose results were brought together to analyze it at the four-year mark. Were you with the Costa Rica vaccine trial or the Patricia trial?
I'm the representing the Patricia trial.
Okay.
And Amy Kramer, who was the first author, represents the CVT or Costa Rica vaccine trial.
Okay. And so you and Amy collaborated. Have you collaborated before on this topic, or was this new for both of you?
Well, I've worked with Amy and her colleagues at the National Cancer Institute for many years. The NCI intramural programs are one of my main collaborators.
Okay. The primary outcome of interest in the study was the incidence of infection with HPV 16 or 18 over the course of the four-year follow-up. Can you briefly describe those results?
Sure. As we have seen previously, the three-dose data had been disclosed and published many years ago, mm-hmm. and that showed near 90% protection against incident detection of HPV 16 and 18.
Mm-hmm.
And when we looked in this analysis at those women who received only two or just one dose, we saw very similar results for each of those groups. So we saw 90-some percent on average protection for the two doses, and as a point estimate, even higher protection for one dose, albeit there were few women in the one-dose group. And overall, the data are derived from what would be called a post-hoc analysis that was non-randomized.
Yeah. And so when I was looking at the 95% confidence intervals, they did overlap at the high end. But at the low end, could that also be a possibility that they were much less protective, because at the low end of protection does extend pretty far down, under 40 or 50% at some levels, doesn't it?
I don't know specifically which table you're looking at in the paper, but essentially it's the width, mm-hmm. so to speak, the width of the confidence interval.
Mm-hmm.
So the width versus the lower end, the width
yep.
of the confidence interval is greater when the sample size is smaller. And
right.
so I don't think we would point to that the lower bound of the confidence interval is what we should focus on. I think that essentially the results say, in simple terms, three versus two versus one doses looks essentially the same in terms of efficacy.
Right, and it does look that way. I was just making the point that the confidence interval does take in a lower efficacy than the mean and the higher range of the confidence interval, but I accept your interpretation. I'm not a statistician.
Yeah.
Okay, you also tracked the vaccine's efficacy against some other high risk types, HPV types, and not found in the vaccine. There were types 31, 33, and 45. And what did that show?
This was a fairly exciting finding, which is that when we looked at the who received HPV vaccine at only two doses, we didn't see any cross-protection or additional benefit for HPV 31, 33, and 45 unless the spacing between those two vaccines was at 6 months apart.
Yeah.
And that is not the current recommended dosing schedule. So the current dosing schedule is the first and second dose for this vaccine should be given 2 months apart.
Yeah.
And that did not demonstrate any added benefit, but for those women who received the vaccine further apart, at 6 months apart, they appeared to benefit by cross-protection, which says that there's some important timing of the priming dose and the boosting dose.
Mm-hmm.
So we observe very good cross-protection with three doses of this vaccine, and we're able to achieve some cross-protection if we change the dosing,
okay,
the interval.
Now, are the viral proteins similar among all of those five types that the cross-protection would be expected?
Yes. In terms of what's called phylogenetic relationships, so their genetic relationships are very close for HPV 16 with HPV 31,
uh-huh,
and for HPV 33, the same thing. It's very similar genetically to HPV 16, and HPV 45 actually is super related to HPV 18. So the cross-protection makes sense in terms of these are very closely related HPV types that you observe this effect with.
And the I guess the thing to bear in mind is that types 16 and 18 account for, I believe the paper says, about 70% of the cancers that are tested for them. So okay.
Right, and the rank order, if you have it, if you look on a global basis, the next most prevalent HPV types in cancer are going to be, generally speaking, HPV 31, 33, and 45.
I see.
So the benefit is targeting the next most critical HPV types.
I see. So you've got the top five.
Correct. There is some geographic variation, but generally speaking, that would be correct.
Right. So speaking of geography, is this study mostly relevant to low-income countries, or does it hold some relevance to higher-income places like the U.S.?
Well, what these data offer us is the chance to realize that we need to know more about less doses, because obviously implementation of a three-dose vaccine delivery is complex and requires infrastructures for that delivery. And so in that sense, it's very important for low-income countries to be able to have a benefit of vaccination, even if there was no cross-protection with a single dose targeting the main HPV types causing cervical cancer. The benefit would be enormous, since the burden of cervical cancer is in the developing world with resource countries.
So
in terms of the United States or high resource countries, of course, the idea of less is more.
Yeah.
Is true from a financial standpoint, but again, implementation in the United States has remained a challenge. As an example, we only see of the individuals who get vaccinated between 30% and 40% of individuals receiving all three doses. So we're not achieving the goal to begin with, even with high resources and infrastructures. So the benefit would be to both low and high income countries, but I think It is important to point out that in the United States, the vaccine that we studied, Cervarix, is not the primary HPV vaccine that's being delivered here.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know whether these results with this bivalent vaccine are going to translate to the vaccines that are most often used, which are the Gardasil vaccines by Merck.
In the United States, so if only about a third of people who show up for the course of injections get all three, so what is it? Is it money? Is it shyness about needles? Is it just inattention? What do you think?
I think that it's the challenge of competing demands that are placed on the parents of adolescents to make sure that they get back for three doses. I think it's the systems that maybe have gone away. We used to, before hepatitis B was a vaccine delivered to infants, we used to have infrastructures that were working on delivering the hepatitis B vaccine, which is a three-dose vaccine, and that was to adolescents. But those sort of infrastructures have been dismantled, and to recreate them would be very expensive. So I think that mostly it's competing demands. I do think that there's some evidence that these vaccines, people have complained that there's a fair degree of local pain.
Uh-huh.
And so you're dealing with adolescents who may be resistant.
Yep.
But I think those are the main issues. It's logistics, lack of infrastructure, parents being busy, and possibly some aversion to pain and needles.
Now, but on the other hand, in the Costa Rica trial and in the Patricia trial, the success rate there was much higher. I mean, it was probably on the order of 80 to 90%, wasn't it?
Yes, but that would be characteristic of the fact that they're clinical trials in which participants are enrolling for the long haul.
Yeah. It,
just as the delivery was very high in terms of three doses, compliance was high. It also had these trials had high compliance for women following up for 4 years, which was long after the vaccine series were administered.
Yeah. The abstract concludes that the results, and I'm quoting, argue for a direct assessment of one dose efficacy of the HPV-16/18 vaccine, end quote. So is such a study contemplated, or is it underway?
Well, there's been lots of discussions and a lot of work going into exactly the design mm-hmm. of such a trial,
mm-hmm.
because it's not without significant costs that a trial like this would be done. I think the trial is not ongoing, but I do believe there is a commitment to garner the resources necessary to do that because of the importance worldwide of reducing the number of doses needed.
And are there enough data to analyze, barring the the start of such a trial? Would other collaborations be possible, or have these two trials provided most of the data available on these vaccines?
Well, you're correct. These two trials have, in these younger age groups, provided the vast majority of data
uh-huh.
on Cervarix. There are other trials that have been conducted with Gardasil, in which I'm not aware, in the 9-valent, the most recent approved vaccine in the United States,
mm-hmm.
whether or not there are studies of one versus two doses. There have been studies that are more what would be called immunogenicity studies,
mm-hmm.
of 1 versus 2 versus 3 doses for both vaccines, Gardasil and the bivalent Cervarix, and those studies are not powered, so not big enough to look at efficacy.
Okay.
So the data for now are more or less limited to what we present, though I'm sure that in other countries, and I'm certain there are things that I may not be aware of, there may be trials that are ongoing, but as far as in the United States or in Costa Rica or with anything that I'm familiar with, I don't know of any trials that have already started.
And this is a 4-year follow-up. Are longer-term follow-ups planned or possible?
Of these trials overall, the answer that I would give is no. These women are not continuing in follow-up, but importantly, there's a reason, at least in the Patricia trial, and that is that women who were in the control group who received hepatitis A vaccine were given the HPV vaccine when the trials were over. So there was a crossover offering to people who had received the control, but a subset of individuals in Patricia, in Finland, so some of the youngest enrolled individuals, may be being followed for the longer term.
I see. Okay.
I'm not familiar adequately with the details of the Finnish component.
Okay. This is a complex and wide-ranging study with implications for, as you said, for the global implications. And so my questions may have overlooked some aspect of the study that you'd like to bring up front. Is there something we haven't covered that you think that we should?
Well, I think that I do want the take-home message to be that these data are very promising. But as far as individuals in the United States or for take-home messages to providers is that we are not sure whether or not these results translate to Gardasil. These results come from Cervarix, and it remains to be understood what the less than 3-dose efficacy would be in both vaccines and over the long term. So it does not provide us with sufficient evidence to change clinical practice. We still need to be working on delivering all 3 doses until we know otherwise, particularly for Gardasil in the United States.
Okay, fair enough. I want to thank you, Dr. Cosette Wheeler, for spending time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Clinical Conversation number 176. Clinical Conversations comes to you through the NEJM Group. Our executive producer is Kristen Kelly. Thank you for listening, and we'd love to have your ideas on future podcasts. So let us know if something occurs to you that we might use to improve these, or a topic occurs to you that you think we should cover. Thanks again.